بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is our 11th session, and inshallah we are going to discuss the eighth lesson of the book Philosophical Instructions. The title of this lesson is The Method of Philosophical Inquiry. So we want to get familiar with the method of philosophical inquiry in contrast to the experimental method. The author begins with a deep regret about the approach that some people have taken towards philosophy. Some people who are influenced by the positivist way of thinking have said that there is no value in philosophical inquiry because the only method which can bring certainty and which can be valid is the experimental method, which is used in natural sciences or in more expanded way in experimental sciences, because as you know, experimental sciences are divided into natural sciences and human sciences. Of course, positivists are very much interested in natural sciences and also then in human sciences, because they think that modern human sciences are all based on experimental knowledge. So people who are influenced by this way of thinking, they say that we have no appreciation of philosophical inquiry because philosophy belongs to the time in which modern sciences were not developed. Experimental knowledge was not flourished. And philosophy is the infancy of sciences. And now that we have the fortune of having modern sciences, experimental knowledges, so we don't need anymore to inquire in the way that philosophers teach us. And the author says that some people among Muslims who have been influenced by this way of thinking have gone so far to say that indeed the Quranic method of inquiry and the method that the Quran teaches us and recommends us is also the experimental method. And by mentioning some simple examples, like for example the Quranic call for reflecting on the creation of camel or, for example, mountains and so on and so forth, they said that the Quran also is in favor of rejecting philosophical and rational method and just focusing on the experimental method. So this has caused the author to allocate one lesson on the importance and significance of the philosophical inquiry and indeed on the intellectual and rational way of inquiring. So, as I said, some people have said that rational method is not bringing any certainty. Philosophy belongs to the time in which the real science, real knowledge was not available. Philosophy is the infancy of the sciences. And they say that the most we can expect from philosophy is to provide us with hypotheses for modern sciences, because there are some areas that we still cannot have experimental investigation, and the philosophy can help us in providing us with some hypotheses. For example, in physics, there are some hypotheses about the creation of the world, about, for example, the extent of the physical world. And we can benefit from these philosophical hypotheses until we can develop our experimental science, and perhaps in future we will not need philosophy even in this regard, and we will replace hypotheses with theories which are backed up by scientific evidence. For example, one of the people who have been very unfair towards philosophy is the German existentialist known as Karl Jaspers. He says that philosophy yields no certain knowledge, so you can attain no certainty from philosophy. And as soon as knowledge is accepted by all as certain with decisive reason, that knowledge cannot be considered philosophical. So whenever you have a certain knowledge, you must make sure that that knowledge is not philosophical. But rather, it at once becomes transformed into scientific knowledge. So he says, whenever you have a certain knowledge, this knowledge is a scientific knowledge. Philosophy by no means can produce any certainty. Okay, this is to give you some idea about the way that some people who are influenced by the positivist attitude towards human knowledge have adopted towards philosophy. To see whether this is acceptable or not, the author starts with an investigation about different methods of inquiry. As you know, whoever has studied logic knows that there are three ways in which we can make inquiry and we can make inference. I'm not saying that these three methods are the methods that all are fruitful and bring valid and sound conclusions, but I'm saying that there can be no method of inquiry other than these three. Then we will see, inshallah, whether these are sound or not, or which one is sound and which one is not sound. But altogether, we have three methods. Because either we have the particular and we want to inference from one particular to another particular. For example, you know that this person is intelligent. And there is another person similar to this person, for example, in age or in race or in appearance. So you say that person A is intelligent and therefore person B also must be intelligent. So you are transmitting the ruling, the judgment which is known for a particular to another particular. This is what is called induction. And our Muslim logicians and philosophers call it istiqra. So if you look at the screen, please. So we have different methods of inference. Okay. One method is induction. Please try also to remember the term which is known to Muslim philosophers and logicians, because in future, whenever you study a textbook in Arabic, you will need that. Al-istiqra. And the transliteration is like this. Al-istiqra. Okay? So, this means that you want to go from particulars to universal. Inshallah, I will come back to that later. Then you have analogy التمثيل and thirdly deduction. القياس. Okay. Now let me explain one by one. I started with analogy. So let's go to the middle. There is no order here. You can discuss in whatever order you wish. But because we already started with analogy, so let me put it in this way. So first we have analogy, at-tamthil. And that is inference from one individual, one particular, to another. Okay? So you say, person A is intelligent, so person B, who is similar to person A, also must be intelligent. This is what is called at-tamthil, or in English they call it analogy. And it's interesting to know that we have something similar to this in fiqh, in jurisprudence, and that is qiyas. In fiqh, whenever they say qiyas, they don't mean deduction, which is the logical qiyas. In fiqh, whenever they say qiyas, they mean logical analogy, which is not valid in some, according to some schools of Islamic jurisprudence. And it is valid according to some others. For example, they say that this liquid is known to be haram because, for example, it is making a person drunk. Then they say a similar liquid also must be haram. Why? Because they are similar to each other. So this is called qiyas. Some schools of Islamic jurisprudence, they say we don't accept qiyas as a valid judgment unless we know that the reason which has made haram, the first one, is exactly known so that we can judge that the same reason exists in the other one. Otherwise, we cannot just say because these two are similar or they look the same, it's enough. We must make sure that 100% the reason for making the first case haram is known to us so that we can judge whether it exists in the second or not. Anyway, this is something that I just wanted to say in brackets. The author also mentions this because some people may get confused. So here, when we say qiyas in logical sense, it's different from qiyas when we talk in fiqh. In fiqh, they mean by qiyas at-tamthil in logical sense. Okay. So we have at-tamthil or analogy, and that is to apply the ruling, the judgment which is known for one particular to another. The other way of inference is induction, al-istiqra, and that is to investigate all the particulars to come to a universal. For example, you say that water boils in 100 degree. I investigate this water. For example, the water in my room. Then, for example, we go outside, we find some water in the river. We experiment on that. We experiment all different waters. Water available to us, and then we say, okay, we can make a universal, a general judgment that all different sorts of water have the same quality. This is called induction. So you are trying to put together the particular findings so that you can come to a universal finding. This is called al-istiqra. And istiqra has two forms. Either it is complete or it is incomplete. Whenever you have the chance to inquire about all the possible particulars, so you have exhausted all the particulars, so this is complete induction. And this is, of course, not possible. Because how is it possible to inquire all possible instances of one species or one universal? Even if you exhaust all the available, all the current particulars, you cannot investigate the ones which existed in the past or the ones which are to come in the future. So, for real universal ideas, real general concepts, which are not limited to certain circumstances, it's not possible to have complete induction. If we could have complete induction, of course, then we could have very easily generalized that. So, if, for example, suppose that there are 1 billion particulars and nothing more, and then we could have investigated all these 1 billion cases, so we could say that all these cases are, for example, endowed with this quality. They enjoy this quality. And incomplete induction means that you have just investigated some of the cases, some of the particulars, some of the individuals, and now you want to generalize and come to a universal judgment. The third way, please look at the screen. The third way is al-qiyas, or deduction. In deduction, you go from universal to particular. It's just opposite induction. This is why I have put it in this way. So induction is the movement from particular to universal. Analogy is from particular to another particular. Deduction is from universal to particular. For example, you say, A is man. A is a human being, a man. And every man is mortal. So A is mortal. This is a deduction. So you know the universal ruling, and that is all human beings are mortal. You know it from somewhere. Already you know that. What you don't know is the judgment about this particular human being. So you say, this is a human being, therefore the universal rule about human beings must apply to this particular one. Of course, there is a very famous traditional objection here. Some people say that if you know that all human beings are mortal, so you must know that this particular is also mortal. So what is the benefit of using deduction? This is a very famous objection, and it's very easily answered. And that is to say that sometimes you know something in general, something in summary, and you don't know that it applies to a particular case. Whenever you identify that particular case as an individual or as an instance of that universal, so you automatically come to the conclusion that that universal applies to this one. So I know that all human beings are mortal from somewhere, either from philosophical way or from, for example, religious sources or from mystical finding. I have found that. Then we have a discussion about a person, whether that person is mortal or not. We automatically apply that one to this one. So the benefit of deduction is to make a knowledge which is overall applicable to an individual case. So sometimes you know something in a summary form, and then you want to know it in more detailed form. So this is a historical objection and answer to it. Anyway, now let's go back to the screen. You have induction, you have analogy, you have deduction. Induction is not valid unless you could have complete induction. And since it's not practically possible to have complete induction, so induction cannot bring any certainty. And there are many discussions about this. Analogy is also not bringing about any certainty. Why? Because whenever you know that one particular has some quality, you cannot easily extend that quality to another particular. There must be an argument, a proof that this quality must exist in the other one. There are many things which are similar to each other, but they are different at the same time. Even twins who are very similar to each other may be different, may have different moralities, different, for example, capacities of learning, different emotions. So you cannot say because these two things look alike, they are similar, so they must be identical in all aspects. So the only thing that remains which can bring certainty is deduction. And traditionally, logicians have discussed about the way we can come to a certain and decisive knowledge and conclusion through deduction. So we need here two things. Any deduction to bring about certain conclusion needs two things. First of all, we need valid form. And secondly, we need certain premises. So we need valid form. This is what we learn in formal logic. For example, in formal logic, we know that each deduction can be in one of four forms, and which forms are bringing results which are fruitful and which are not, which are fertile and which are not. And then we know that, for example, in the first form, whether the major premise must be positive or negative, or the minor one must be negative or positive, they must be, for example, limited or must be universal, general. All these things we discuss it in formal logic. So these pertain to the formal aspect of it. At the same time, the premises also must be certain. So when you have a valid form, it's not enough. You must also make sure that your premises are okay. So there are many cases that logicians give as examples to show that you may have valid form, but if premises are not acceptable, so you may have wrong judgment. For example, sometimes you have equivocal terms. So the equivocal term is used in one sense in the major premise and in another sense in the minor premise. For example, if you say that A is a spring, and you mean by spring a season, and then you say a spring is B, and you mean by a spring here, for example, the water. So, can you say, so A is B? No, because a spring is used in two different senses. So we don't need just to have valid form, but rather we need also to have sound and valid premises which fit in with each other. And sometimes the premises may be wrong. The premises may be, for example, just taken as granted without having any reason. So the author says that the only way that we can come to a certain knowledge is through deduction. Even more, the author says that the only way that we can have reasoning, we can have inference, is through deduction. Even in induction, there is a hidden deduction. Even in analogy, there is a hidden deduction. How? Whenever you say that, for example, this particular has this quality, therefore something similar to that must have the same quality, Indeed, you are using a hidden deduction, and that is, all the similar objects must be identical in their qualities. So you are saying that, for example, A is intelligent. And then there is a hidden deduction here, that everything which is similar must have the same quality. So with the usage of this hidden deduction, you can make the inference, of course not validly, that something similar to A also must be intelligent. In other words, our mind cannot work without reducing all different forms of inference into a deductive form. So in induction, we have a hidden deduction that these two are similar, and then everything which is similar to something else must be identical with that in the qualities. The same is true about analogy. The same is true about induction. You say that we have investigated many, many cases, many, many individuals of one universal, and whenever you know that most of the cases of one universal have some quality, so you can make sure that that universal by nature, by definition, must have that quality. This is a famous discussion in logic, and there is a rule which is called which is known as al-qa'ida al-aksariyah, which means that something which can be found in most of the cases, most of the instances, most of the individuals of one universal cannot be created by external factors. It must be an outcome of its essential nature. We don't want to go into detail. This is a very complicated issue. Just we wanted to say that even if there is an induction, there is a hidden deduction there. Even when there is a, for example, case of analogy, there is a hidden deduction. So you cannot find any form of inference unless there is either explicitly or implicitly a form of deduction. Of course, deductions are sometimes valid and sometimes not valid. If a deduction is based on a valid form and valid premises, so that deduction is valid. And the conclusion that we make will be acceptable according to the logical criteria that we have. Now, let's go back to our own issue. And that is about the difference between philosophical inquiry and scientific inquiry or experimental inquiry. In philosophy, we use deductive reasoning. In sciences, modern sciences, in experimental knowledge, we use experimental methods. But the discussion that we have had up to now shows that experimental method is also a form of deductive inquiry. The only difference between philosophy and experimental method is that they use different premises. They use different forms of deduction. It may look that they are totally different. It may look that in sciences, for example, we use induction and in philosophy we use deduction. But as we said, all go back to deduction. So it's a matter of just which form of deduction you are using, which form of premises you are using. So some people may say that we say philosophy is based on deductive argumentation because we mean by deductive argumentation the deduction which is only based on intellectual premises. Okay, if you mean by deduction this, it's okay. But you should know that this is the way that you name it. Other people may name it in another way. What is the reality here is that both philosophy and sciences are based on deduction. In philosophy, we need a form of deduction which is valid in form and whose premises are also certain, either because they are self-evident, or if they are not self-evident, they can be reduced back to self-evident premises. And those which are self-evident must be known to us according to the categories of self-evident premises that logicians have introduced to us. Maybe self-evident because they are, for example, tautologies. Maybe they are self-evident because we know them through, for example, our intuitions or other ways. We are not going into details now. In sciences, in experimental sciences, we use deduction, but may be hidden to us. So it may look that we are using, for example, just inductions or analogies. But indeed, we are using deductions. But that deduction can be valid only if it complies with the procedure of experimental inquiry, which is set up by logic and, in a sense, by philosophy of science. Anyway, we don't need to go into further details now, because this is something that we discuss it in logic, and inshallah we may have some occasions that we discuss about this issue also in philosophy later. But just what we want to say is that the experimental method is not in contrast to deduction. This is one thing. Experimental method is also a form of deduction, but not clearly, not explicitly. Secondly, experimental method is not identical with induction. Induction is something, experimental method is something else. Of course, in experimental method, you may think that you are using induction, but indeed that induction itself is based on deduction. But there are two separate things. The other thing that we must know is that both induction and experimentation both need deduction. So experimentation is different from induction, and they both need deduction. This is also something which is very important for us to know. So, what is the conclusion here? What is the outcome of this detailed discussion? The outcome is this, that in philosophy and in experimental sciences, both we use deduction. So it's not a matter of using deduction or induction to distinguish between philosophy and science. No. It's a matter of using which form of deduction. In philosophy, we use pure intellectual deduction. In experimental sciences, we may use some form of deduction which is based on experimental premises, or one premise is experimental, the other is intellectual. Now, the debate about the value and significance of philosophical inquiry, which we mentioned at the beginning, proves to be not grounded, well established, proves to be baseless. Because they wanted to say that philosophy is not useful, philosophy is not making any progress, philosophy is full of controversies because it uses deduction. And experimental knowledge is good because it uses induction. So we said this is not a valid distinction. Now let's see, what is the scope of the rational inquiry and what's the scope of experimental method or inquiry, which is also called empirical method or inquiry. First of all, we should know that this is not something that we can decide by ourselves. This is not something conventional that I say, okay, I would like to use rational method in philosophy. You may say, no, I would like to use, for example, empirical method or experimental method in philosophy. No, it's not a matter of taste, a matter of opinion or personal preference. It all relates to the nature of the problems that are at issue. So, in philosophy, because we are dealing with the universal propositions, universal rulings, universal judgments, so we must use the method which is explicitly discussed in logic, and it's called demonstration, al-burhan. Please look at the screen. This is a technical term, and maybe not mentioned in the book here, but you must know it. We have demonstration. Al-Burhan. This is a form of deduction which is both valid in form and also certain in premises, and this is the one that we accepted in philosophy, Al-Burhan. And we discuss about this in both logic and also introduction to philosophy. But in the empirical sciences, we don't need that much detailed and sophisticated ways of demonstrating our ideas. Indeed, it's not possible for us to use this. For example, if we want to know certain qualities of a chemical substance, if we want to know, for example, at what temperature water starts boiling, we cannot use burhan, we cannot prove it rationally. We must go and investigate different cases and then make some theories, hypotheses, and confirm it or back it up by evidence. And that may be later be modified by further investigations and so on and so forth. So I cannot use philosophical method or intellectual method in modern sciences. We need philosophy in modern sciences to give us the principles, al-mabade. But we cannot use philosophy there. Just let me give you a much more simple example. Can you use philosophy to tell that how many people are in the next room? No. If you ask me a very simple question, how many people are there in the next room? I cannot answer by reasoning, by thinking. No. I need to go and see. Then I can tell you that there are four people, three people, or none. So I cannot use philosophical method in experimental sciences or empirical knowledge. At the same time, we cannot use experimental method in philosophical questions. I cannot say by seeing or, for example, feeling or smelling, I can tell you, for example, that what is the quality of a spiritual, for example, substance. How many spiritual substances are there? Or indeed, I cannot even tell you whether there is a substance or not through sensation. So sensation is silent. Not only cannot deny, but also cannot make any judgment. Yes, sometimes you may have some sensation, and through them, by using intellectual arguments, you may prove that, for example, a spirit must be there. But just having experiences, just having empirical knowledge, it's not enough. Okay, so the empirical knowledge has its own scope, and the intellectual knowledge also has its own scope, and we should use it, everyone in its appropriate place. And if you see that in the past there were some philosophers who used, for example, intellectual method in some, for example, physical or chemical or biological or botanic discussions, it was not because philosophy can solve all these problems. No, they were not that much endowed with equipment, with scientific, for example, labs and so on and so forth. So they needed to supplement that by some stipulations. But many of them very well knew that we can use experimental or empirical knowledge in sciences, and this is why, for example, Aristotle, with the help of Alexander of Macedonia, had a garden in which he was making experimentations. So philosophers know, and today better than any time, they know that what is the scope of the empirical knowledge and what is the scope of the rational knowledge. Both can be helpful if we apply them properly. So this is not a deficiency or a weak point in philosophy that it does not use empirical knowledge. No, indeed, it is a positive point in philosophy because it is free from the shortcomings of the empirical knowledge. So, inshallah, in future we can get more familiar with the nature of philosophy when we really try and start to deal with the philosophical problems. Now we are just talking about philosophy, and gradually we are making ourselves prepare to enter into the core of philosophy. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.